Blog Talk Radio.
In a boomer shack, just a little shanty by the railroad track. Freight train was all taught me how to cry. Humming of the drivers and the lullaby. I got freight train blues. Oh Lordy, mama, got him in the bottom of my rambling ship. I when the whistle blows, I got to go. Baby, don't you know it looks like I'm never gonna lose the freight train blues. My daddy was a farmer and my mama, yeah, she was the only daughter of the engineer. My sweetheart loved a brakeman and it ain't no joke. It seemed the way she keeps a good man broke. I got the freight train blues. Oh, Lord, mama, got him in the bottom of my rambling shoe. The blows, I got to go. Oh, my, but don't you know? Well, it looks like I'm never gonna lose the freight train blues. Well, the only thing that makes me laugh again is a southbound whistle on the southbound train. Every place I wanna go, I never can go because you know I got freight train blues. Oh, Lordy, mama, I got him in the bottom of my rambling shoe.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Hard Hits. It is Derek Felix with you here in Staten Island, New York, live over the next, I guess, about 46 minutes to play with here. It started a little bit late. Sometimes, you know, you just get caught up in certain things, but that was Bob Dylan with a classic called Freight Train Blues. So I like that song, actually. I like a lot of Bob Dylan songs. Great country folk singer and great writer, obviously. I've had a number of his stuff covered. But it is a Hard Hits here in the Big Apple, in the Forgotten Borough, the Park Borough of Solent here in NYC. I hope everybody is doing outstanding out there on this late Tuesday evening to early Wednesday morning. 12:44 on the East Coast. Lots to get to, obviously. I want to start with the Islanders and Flyers. The Islanders had a chance to wrap it up, go to their first conference final since 1993. They still are going to have two more cracks at it in 27 years since that run they had in 93. And tonight, they fell to the Philadelphia Flyers 4-3 in overtime. This was an interesting game for a couple of reasons. Actually, I could think of three. Number one, the Islanders, they took a lead. They had a lead in this game. And usually when they take the lead, they're pretty tough when they play with the lead. They did get the first goal in this game. And I thought the longer it went scoreless, that would be in the Islanders' favor. And it's like it would be, even though the Flyers played a real good first period, but the Islanders did get the first goal. You had to be thinking, well, that's probably a bad sign for the Flyers. So they were able to score on the power play, something that they don't do a lot of, but they did connect on the power play for one of their goals. And I think that was in this early in the second period. So they did get off to the good start. They didn't get. I won't say that they didn't get off to a good start. What am I saying? They didn't play a good first period. The Flyers played a good first period. They think they only gave up three shots and or four shots. I think the shots were 11-4. But the Flyers did not take advantage. Varlamov was pretty good. The Flyers did take a couple of bad penalties, and sometimes when you take those bad penalties, sometimes it does cost you. And the second penalty was just a lazy Derek Grant trip, and I don't know why you would have your fourth line out in the final minute, but I think it was fourth line against fourth line. He tripped up Leo Komarov, and it was one of those power plays where it went between periods, and Barzal was able to score. Bailey threw the puck, and it went off Barzal and in. And Barzal, here's what happened. Barzal was thrown, was shoved from behind into Carter Hart. So on this play, into Hart, but then the puck goes behind the net. And Eberle plays it to Bailey, and Bailey has the presence to throw the puck towards the net. It banks off of, I think it went off a Flyer, then it went off Barzal. So banked off both a Flyer and Barzal and went in. And so Barzal got a power play goal. Elaine Vigneault immediately challenged. They talked it over and they wanted to challenge it. And just looking at it, I just felt like there's no way it could have been challenged for goalie interference because Barzal was shoved in there and it looked to me like there was enough time. It was a kind of a continuation play. So I felt that would be a good goal. And I thought it was a mistake for Vigneault to challenge, and Vigneault lost the challenge. And obviously that gave the Islanders another power play. So kind of a double whammy there. When you do make those challenges and they are unsuccessful, I mean, that could be a double whammy, especially if they count a goal. You just got scored on. That's the second time that Vigneault did that. He did that in the one game they had won previously in game two. And that was the game that they wound up winning in overtime, and they could have lost. They could have lost that game in regulation. It was a game they led 3-0. That was the one game that I really didn't see. I missed, but I watched the highlights. I heard all about it, and they were able to win the game in overtime. But that was very risky, and this was risky too, especially trailing 1-0. And you have to figure that would be deflating. If they had given up a power play goal, set two straight power play goals, that would have been deflating. But the Flyers had a great penalty kill. The Islanders, they did play a better second period, but after controlling the period, they kind of let it get away from them in the final half. I'd say the final maybe 7-8 minutes, the Flyers started to pick it up. And finally, some of the guys that have been MIA showed up to the plate. Claude Giroux had not scored in this postseason, folks. Claude Giroux, I think, came in with maybe one goal in his last 23 games in the postseason. He is the captain of the Flyers. He obviously has not been getting it done. AV chose to stick with Claude Giroux. He chose to keep Giroux with Sean Couturier and Jake Voracek on that top line, which has not gotten it done, but they were a little bit more visible tonight. They certainly were, applied some pressure, and it would be Claude Giroux tipping in. Nice, beautiful redirect of a Philip Myers shot. Myers was the hero of game two for the Flyers, and he would tie the game up with over 4 minutes left, so 4:15 left from Myers and Couturier. Beautiful deflection for Varlamov. Not much of a chance for him on that. And the Flyers would continue their momentum. A rear miscue for the Islanders where they broke down in transition. Usually they're so fundamentally sound, but the Flyers did have the momentum. And James Van Riemsdyk, another guy that hadn't done much, he was a healthy scratch during the same series earlier, but he did dress for game four, a game that he lost, and he was in this game. And Vigneault decided to bump him up to the second line, and it paid dividends. And here's the thing. Prior to this goal, Sean Couturier, who got an assist on the Giroux goal, Couturier had a collision. He collided, I think, with Barzal. It was kind of like one of those knee or leg-on-leg collisions, and he left the game. And you could tell just looking at the replay That was not good at all. He looked like he was in a lot of pain. And that looks pretty serious. I don't think you're going to see Sean Couturier for Thursday night. So that's not a good sign for the Philadelphia Flyers if they do want to pull this out and come back and force a Game 7 from 3-1 deficit. You know, Danny Biggio has done it twice. He did it with the Rangers in 2014. I think that Marty St. Louis losing his mom really helped energize the Rangers. And once they got Game 5, I felt it. I felt like they were going to come back and win the series. And in 2015, they did it again. They pulled it off against the Caps. And they needed a little bit of a miracle there with Derek Stepan setting up Bazzetta at a Game 5 that I was at in 2015, the second round, same round that they beat the Penguins final and conquered them. And he scored that with like 130 or 140 left or whatever in regulation. And then McDonough would win the game on a drop pass by Stepan, and the Rangers would come back. And Stepan would be the ultimate hero in Game 7. So Oladipo has coached a couple of teams, a couple of Rangers teams that came back. And he does. So he has experience in that aspect. Van Riemsdyk was able to score this goal in transition. This is just a beautiful play here. Konechny, who also has been quiet, has not scored a goal. And Konechny was their leading scorer. But he did have a good game, picked up a pair of assists, and was very involved in this game. So that's never a good sign for the Flyers. Van Riemsdyk had a really good game. He scored two goals. This is the first goal. This was just a beautiful move in transition. Made a great move and sweet finish, top shelf. And that put the Flyers ahead 2-1 late in the second period, coming at 18-18, and they had the 2-1 lead. Now, they had the momentum, but anybody who's watched the series knows the Islanders are not going to go quietly. And my whole thinking was they could not sit back and try to protect the one-goal lead. And they didn't. As Kevin Hayes and Konechny made a great play, they good forecheck behind the net, setting up Matt Niskanen. Konechny was able to make a cross-ice feed to Matt Niskanen. And Niskanen, who has been kind of a goat in a couple of games with some bad defensive plays and some kind of dirty hits, is something that he's done in this playoff. Ask Brendan Gallagher and ask Canadian fans. But Niskanen was wide open, and he was able to just rip a beautiful shot far side and far post on Varlamov at 4:32 of the third period. So the Flyers were in control. They had scored three straight goals. You had to be feeling pretty good if you were pulling for the Flyers. And look, I would say the Flyers are the less two evils because I'm a Rangers fan. So I was kind of hoping that the Flyers would show up and show a pulse and make the Islanders earn it. Things started to turn. At one point, the Islanders only had, I think, 13 shots. They had 13 shots. And the Flyers were totally in control. And then all of a sudden, their momentum stopped. They were stuck on 26 shots for the longest time as they started to sit back. And I don't know why coaches do this, but I also think it's kind of like a mental thing with players as well, because they start sitting back. And the Flyers were without Sean Couturier. And Sean Couturier is their most important player. He is their best player. He is a two-way center. He is a guy that can win a Selke trophy. I think he's up for it this year. I think he deserves to probably get it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But definitely, you couldn't have been feeling too good there, watching them sit back. The Islanders just started to gain momentum. At first, they weren't really racking up a lot of shots. They increased it from 13, from like 13, 16 to 17. All of a sudden, it started increasing. They started applying more pressure because the Flyers backed off. And you can't back off in these games. The Islanders are a very good, resilient, high club, very well coached by Barry Trotz, four-line team. They do play a really good forecheck style. And even though they do rely on their defense, and on the ability to force turnovers and get in transition, what I will say is that they can turn it on. They can forecheck you, and they can get in transition, and they can earn goals. And they lost Matt Barzal. Barzal, fortunately, on a follow-through, was hit by a high stick. It was a foul throw, though, and it caught him, I think, maybe in the eye. So he did not return. He was cut on the play, but he is supposedly he is okay. I was reading reports, so it sounds like he's going to be okay, and that's good news for the Islanders. And obviously, you don't want to see any player hurt. You don't want them to obviously miss time. But it sounds like Barzal should be back for Game 6. So that's good news for the Islanders as he centers their top line. And he did score one of their goals tonight. Now, so they were without their top center for the rest of the game. But the one thing about the Islanders, and I don't agree with Keith Jones, just because, and I heard it on the broadcast as well on NBC, and I just totally disagree. You know, Matt Barzal is their top guy in terms of offense, but the Islanders are a four-line team. They added Pajot, and Pajot, all he does is score big goals. He's got 7 goals to lead the way for the Islanders. Josh Bailey has certainly been a guy that's been a factor. He sets up a lot of goals, scored a couple too. Brock Nelson, you know, he plays with Anthony Beauvillier and Josh Bailey. Anders Lee can score goals. Just because Barzal wasn't playing with him doesn't mean he can't score goals. Even their fourth line with that fourth line, which is their identity, with Zizekas, Butterbuck, and Matt Martin. They've contributed during this postseason. Matt Martin has 3 goals. Zizekas actually doesn't have any goals, but then Butterbuck scored. So they all can factor in. And he puts Derek Brassard in the lineup, Trotsky inserts him, and Brassard has paid some dividends. So they were backing off. And Hart was making the saves at first, but a great transition started by Mayfield to Bailey, and Bailey made a great cross-ice feed to Nelson. And it was from far out, a one-timer. It just looked like Hart did not expect it. It was a quick one-timer, a really good shot, and Nelson gets his 6th of the playoffs. He also scored in the last game, an Islander victory, and Nelson with his 6th. And he had been quiet until the last game in the series, so Nelson has picked it up, and he makes it a 3-2 game, and 4:14 left. And also you're thinking, the Flyers are not generating anything at this point. They're not pushing. They're seeding the blue line. And I'm like, where have I seen this before? I mean, I've seen this before with the Rangers, in 2014 against the Kings. I've seen it before with Theo where he sits back. Now, that's just not a good strategy. I don't know why teams do it, but, you know, you've heard the expression in football, prevent defense prevents you from winning. Same thing in hockey. So when he scored that goal, Nelson, you could just feel the momentum coming. You could feel it shift. You felt it coming. And sure enough, kind of a streaky kind of play, kind of a strange play, behind the net, Zizekas and Clutterbuck, and Clutterbuck makes a great, he made an outstanding backhand pass across to Brassard, who backhanded it in. Just a great play, and that goal was not even 2 minutes later. It was about a minute and a half later, and they tied the game up with 2:41 left. There it is again. The Islanders, who had almost caught up in shots by the end of regulation. And the Flyers, their number stayed at 26 for the longest time. It stayed at 26 for the longest time. And then finally, once the game tied up, they finally got a shot on goal. And that's just not how you're going to play. That's not how you play if you want to win. And even though the shots were 12-6 Islanders, I think it was about 12-2 or 12. It was about 12-1 over the after that goal that they got. That made it 3-1. Niskanen scored. So once again, it would go to overtime for the Flyers, and they had blown another game where they scored 3 goals. This time it was not a 3-goal lead; it was a 2-goal lead with less than 5 minutes left. They gave up those goals, so less than 2 minutes apart. And I was just thinking, there's just unless the Flyers do not come out and go for it. Like the Bruins did, even though they didn't get the result, and they probably deserved the result, but they got eliminated by the Lightning in double overtime. And congratulations to Stan Lightning. Terrific, outstanding series by them. And they won 5 games against Boston. But that was great playoff hockey.
if the Flyers didn't come out and leave it on the line after they had played, for the most part, a good game, and they played a good, they also played a good game four. They had the better of the play, but they could not score on Thomas Greiss. They only scored one goal against Greiss. Oh, they did get a second goal late. They teased you. That's right. They teased you to death. And they could not dig the puck out of the corner for the last 14 and a half seconds. Down 3-2 and we're losing it 3-2. I mean, it was just what a tease that was. But I think it was a Provorov shot that got deflected in. But you can't play that way. And the overtime was kind of tricky. The Islanders did have a 7-1 shot edge at one point, but the Flyers had a couple great chances to win the game early. First, Kevin Hayes got the one shot on goal early. He was set up perfectly, and just a outstanding save by Semyon Varlamov as he came across, shut the pads down, and shut the door on it. And off a Flyer offensive faceoff, a win, a goal pulse for the Flyers. And at that point, I'm just thinking, they've already had, you know, two great chances. They're probably going to lose the game. But Carter Hart made the saves, and the biggest save, if the Flyers do come back in the series and they do take it to a game seven, remember the save that Carter Hart made. It was a 2-on-1 for the Islanders, clear cut 2-on-1, and he absolutely robs. I think it was Komarov, actually, for sure or not. On a 2-on-1, he makes a great save. I thought the game was over. I thought the series was over. He slides across. It closes up the five hole, closes up the pads, and he thought it was behind him. And what a save that was by Carter Hart. This guy is so poised. He's a second-year goaltender, and he really is a huge part of the Philadelphia Flyers is Carter Hart. And he was back in net after Brian Elliott played a good game. He did play a good game in game four in the back-to-back situation. I probably would have played Carter Hart myself, but I could not fault Brian Elliott for that loss. I thought the Islanders, they created good goals in that win. But just that save was the save. And this is, and Matt Martin, you know, he did take a penalty. Tripping Minor, he handed the Flyers a power play, but they could not cast it in. Hart would make that save. And finally, the hero, Scott Laughton, who Vigneault decided to move up. Laughton has been an effective player in the series. He had mostly been centering that third line. Pitlick and Van Riemsdyk had played mostly on that third line. Tonight, Laughton originally was with Pitlick, and Pitlick, who scored a goal earlier in the series, he's been a nice player, actually, because he forechecks well, and so does Scott Laughton. And Scott Laughton is one of the younger Flyers, and I like him. He's a very good forechecking center. He's a secondary player, but he's had a really good playoffs for the Philadelphia Flyers. He was able to deflect home a Ivan Provorov shot. Provorov is very spotty defensively still, so he does need work there. But he can fire the puck. And Drew made a great play on this. Drew, who has really, so we know about his struggles, but he played a really good game tonight. Finally breaking his drought in the playoffs and just made a really great play, good play to get the puck at the top on the forecheck to Provorov. And then Provorov made a very smart read there. He knew that the Islanders would sell out to block the shot, so he patiently held the puck, moved to the center, and was able to get his wrist shot off, a very deflectable shot, and Laughton was able to get a nice redirect and tip it home. Beautiful deflection past Varlamov, and that would be the overtime winner at 12:20 of the first overtime. And the Philadelphia Flyers survived. They survived. So it is 3-2. It's still 3-2 in favor of the New York Islanders. And this was a good game to watch, and the overtime was very exciting. A lot of chances on both sides. The Flyers missed the net a few times, too, because I didn't feel like it was lopsided at all. Even though the shots were 7-1, the Islanders were blocking some shots, and the Flyers were missing some chances too. So, I thought the overtime was very exciting, and the Flyers do pull it out. And two times they have blown leads. A 3-goal lead in game two, and this time it was 2-goal lead in game five, and they had to go to overtime to win. So they do survive, and they're still alive. And we'll see what happens for game six in Toronto in the bubble. The Islanders will look to finish off the Islanders. I mean, they'll look to finish off the Flyers once again. And my advice, look, I've seen this so many times. I've seen it now. I'm very familiar with momentum. I've seen 3-1 comebacks plenty of times. Trotz is going to tell his players, and we've got to finish this off on Thursday. We've got to get this done. They have to finish this. You're probably not going to see Couturier back. I definitely don't see him playing in game six unless they get some really encouraging news. AV did not provide any updates, and I don't think you'll know anything until before game time on Thursday. So they're going to want to finish this, the Islanders, and they're probably going to have an advantage because I think Barzal's going to return for that game. The Islanders blocked 28 shots of the team. Flyers have 10 block shots. Giveaways, and this is a problem with the Flyers. They do turn over pucks, 19 giveaways. The Islanders had 10. Hits were about even, 56-3 in favor of the Islanders. Islanders won the special teams battle. They go 1-4 on the power play. Flyers were 0-2, including 1 in overtime. And the Islanders had a really good penalty kill, and they had no shots at the Flyers. I still don't like what I see from Voracek. He had been good in the postseason previously, but he's not really done much in the series. Konechny is still without a goal. I cannot believe that. Konechny is a guy that's around the net. He's around the puck. He is making things happen. It's just not going in for him right now. And I thought he played a good game. He had 2 assists, so he's one of the stars. Giroux. Yeah, I probably would give Giroux the first star, even though I'm sure the first star went to the overtime hero, Scott Laughton. Scott Laughton did have the goal assist, actually. So Giroux would get second star. I would give Laughton the number one star. All right, so but give the Islanders credit. They are never out of the game. Josh Bailey had 2 assists for them. Barzal scored, as well as Brassard. Nelson got the other goal. This is a dangerous team. They play playoff style hockey. They can check you to death. They make it tough. They did have a little bit of a lapse in the second period, and that's why they fell behind. So we'll see where things go, but it will be very interesting to see, you know, who comes out back in game six. I would expect the Islanders to come out with more desperation. They did not come out and play a good first period. They were lucky that the game was scoreless in the first period. They came out and played a better second period, and then Flyers finally showed you something. They showed a little bit of guts. And, yeah, they made things a little dicey, as Lane Vigo said. They made it interesting. And, you've got to make sure you put your foot down. You can't stop forechecking. You can't just go into a cocoon and see the blue line. They gave the Islanders easy access, and that allowed the Islanders to get the confidence they needed and the goals they needed, create the goals they needed to force the overtime. This is a 3-2 series, and I did pick the Islanders to win. I originally picked the Flyers at first thought to win in six, and after thinking about it, I was like, and watching the Flyers struggle against the Canadiens, thinking about how the Islanders were playing, I was like, the Islanders are going to win the series. I actually picked the Islanders to win in 5 or 6 games, so I think I had a button in 5. Some people actually have them sweeping because the Flyers just had not looked good. But the Flyers have a good team. It's not like they don't have a good roster. They do have a good team. But there have been too many gaps defensively, I've noticed, in the coverage. And you don't see Shane Gostisbehere anywhere near the ice anymore. Now Robert Hack has replaced him. In terms of their best defenseman so far in the series, I would probably say Philippe Myers. He's a guy that kind of goes unnoticed, but I like the way he's played in the series. Provorov has been a little shaky, but he did create tonight's overtime winner. Have not liked what I've seen from Niskanen, or what he finally contributed offensively. Defensively, he's a little bit shaky, and he will throw the dirty hit, which can drive fans nuts from the opposing side. So it will be very interesting to see, you know, who comes out on top. I just want to look. You know, this was only a one overtime game, so you're not going to see too many big ice times. I just want to see which player got the most ice time. By far, Provorov. Provorov played 29.04 for the Philadelphia Flyers. He plays both power play and penalty kill. So that's not a shocker at all. 24.31 for Matt Niskanen. I think that's too much, to be honest. But Claude Giroux got a lot of minutes as well. Couturier would have gotten a ton of minutes if he didn't get hurt in this game. Van Riemsdyk had a good game as well. So they are alive. Time on this topic, and what a shocker that I would. All right, so I want to quickly just shift here. I'm just going to give a quick shift. Canucks were able to win their game five as well and stay alive against the dominant Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights did not wrap up the series, but they just were dominant in this game. The bottom line is that in a game where Jacob Markstrom was unavailable, and I think it's an injury. I don't think it has anything to do with the COVID. They showed him up in the stands watching. He was unavailable for this game, were unfit to play. They're not really allowed to, you know, obviously reveal. And usually they don't reveal what's wrong, but usually to find out if it's lower body or upper body. But they have to say unfit. And in this game, all of a sudden you have Thatcher Demko. Thatcher Demko is a guy that went to BC. He's highly thought of. He was a first round or a high draft pick. He is a second round pick. He is 24 years old. He is the backup goaltender. He did play for BC. He was very good for BC. And he's the forgotten guy, obviously, with Markstrom establishing himself. After a crazy game four, a game where the Canucks blew a 3-2 lead in the third period and just had a miserable third period, miserable time in the third. The one thing about Vegas, they play very heavy. They come at you at 4-1. They're like the Islanders, except they got more skill. They got guys like Barkstone. They got guys like Max Pacioretty, Riley Smith. They have Marc Gasol. They have Alex Tuch. They have a bunch of guys. And they also have Shea Theodore. And Theodore has been brilliant. And he scored just a brilliant goal tonight, a highlight reel goal, which put them ahead 1-0. And they just were so dominant. I think the shots were 29-10 after two periods. And you're just thinking, they're just dominating this game. But there was 28-10 after two periods, but the game was tied. After Shea Theodore takes a Riley Smith feed through and just goals around about three different Canucks and just scores an absolute beauty. His fifth of the post, he leads them in scoring, I think, with 13 points. I think it's 13 or 14 points. He really is something. Can't believe the Ducks gave up on this guy. He scored it, you know, late in the second period because Demko was unbelievable in this game. He was making all sorts of saves. He was giving his team a chance. But on the next shift, Brock Besser, able to deflect home a JT Miller pass in transition started by Quinn Hughes. And just 24 seconds later, the Canucks got it back. The Canucks, who were dominated in this game, I think the shots were something like 23-7. They were stuck on seven shots for the longest time. It was just it was unbelievable that you have Theodore scoring the goal, and you're just thinking, that's it. That's going to be it, right? They're just going to get buried, the Canucks. And then Besser comes back and scores. And he has been ice cold in the series, and he winds up scoring a huge goal, tie the game up. So they were outshot 18-4 in the second period. Shots were 10-6 in the first, and you know they were in big trouble. But Besser and Thatcher Demko saved them in this game. And Demko was unbelievable in this game. Vegas continued to pile up the shots in the third period, but it was a beautiful deflection by Elias Pettersson, their star center. Well, JT Bella takes the faceoffs for the most part because JT's good at that. That was a great trade by them, getting him from Tampa. He just wasn't a good fit in Tampa. And now But he also changed. He changed. He realized that he had to become more consistent. And JT's just been tremendous. How good has JT Miller been the ex-Ranger, former first-round pick. This is a guy that used to not perform in the playoffs because he just didn't go to the areas where he needed to go. That's why he had one goal in his first, like, 40 postseason games, and we used to just call him a playoff no-show, a playoff choker, a guy that just can't get it done in playoffs for whatever reason. But JT knows where to go. He knows how to play the game now, kind of like Kevin Hayes. Kevin Hayes has been the best Flyers player, in my opinion, aside from Carter Hart. He's just very noticeable for the Flyers. But Miller has assisted on the last six Canucks goals, JT Miller. He got two assists in this game. And JT has been everywhere. He got it over, and Besser fired a shot, and Pettersson able to get a beautiful redirect for the deflection past Robin Lehner. Lehner, the former Islander, former Blackhawk, was back in net after Fleury got the last game because it was a back-to-back. And Fleury was good in that game, in that 6-3 run. But Lehner has been the one guy. That's the guy that DeBoer seems to trust more. How lopsided were the shots? Well, Vegas kept coming. They were only down 2-1. They outshot Canucks 15-7, so it was a little more even in terms of, well, not even, but at least the Canucks played a third period. At least they played a little bit better in the third, but Vegas just piled up the shots, and Markstrom, I'm so used to saying him, but Patrick Demko made the saves, and I can't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, so I really apologize to him. But he was remarkable in this game, makes 42 saves, he made it stand up, and goalies can't steal games. He had to stop 32 shots in the final two periods, 32 of 33 shots for them to win. And so the Canucks forced a game six. If they play like that again, the series will end. I did pick the Canucks in an upset in seven games, but I was kind of doing that to be different. I know Vegas is a better team. I know this. So I was doing it to be different. And I know Vegas is better. And I fully expected the series to end tonight. And I probably should have. But the Canucks responded well, with Brock Besser having his best game in quite a while. JT Miller doing what JT Miller does, two more apples for him. Besser with a goal and an apple. And Pettersson's getting the game winner. And so the right guy showed up in this game for the Canucks. Bo Horvat, of course, played a ton of minutes because he does play a ton of minutes. Edler, obviously. Edler played over 26 and a half minutes for Alex Edler. Alex Edler's been there forever. He's still the holdover. He is the holdover, the lone holdover from that team that lost under Alain Vigneault in 2011 to the Boston Bruins. When they lost the series, they should have won. They were up 2-0. They were up 3-2. Lost that awful game 7, 4-0 to the Bruins, who just would not be denied in that game. I just want to spend a minute talking about the Boston Bruins for a second. They did get eliminated from the Lightning. I thought the Lightning would take it in 6. You know, it's very interesting because if you looked at the series, you broke it down, you had a feeling it would be a very good series. And for the most part, it was, except for one game where the Bruins just did not show up. Whatever. I don't know why. Something happened. After they won the first game, and they played a really good first game, and they come back in game 2, Marchand comes back and forces overtime. You're thinking, maybe the Lightning just can't beat this team. But the Lightning pulled out game 2, and Palat was the hero. And Palat was the best player in the series. He was just clutch. He was clutch in the series. And he's just scored a lot of big goals for them. And he's like the guy that everybody forgets about. But Braden Point is playing some tremendous hockey for the Lightning. He is their best forward. I think Cabot's still probably a better player, but I think, you know what it is? They both are so valuable to their team. The same thing with Vasilevsky, because if they had to put Curtis McElhinney in, they would not be able to win these games. And
And I just love the way they're playing. They're very active. They were the better skating team against the Bruins, and they are. And even without Steven Stamkos and McDonough, don't forget Ryan McDonough did not play until game 5. He had been hurt, and he had missed about 5 games. He missed the end of the first round. And Ryan McDonough looked healthy. I was impressed with what I saw from Ryan McDonough in that game 5. He looked really good. He was good pinching. He was good defensively. He looked like Ryan McDonough. And Victor Hedman is just a beast. I mean, he nearly led them back in the one game that they lost. Hedman is just, he's unbelievable. He is just unbelievable, is Victor Hedman. He would get the game winner in overtime. And that was a well-played game. And it was a 2 overtime game, and these two teams just went at it. And even though this was a 5-game series, and I don't really know what happened to the Bruins in game 3, they just took so many bad penalties, and they kept handing the Lightning power plays. And I still go back to, they had 5 Bruins. You had 5 Bruins surrounding Andre Palat, and Palat went to the dirty area. And Palat was able to score on a pass from Brendan Point behind the net. And he had 5 Bruins in there. And nobody kept him out. And I did not watch much of that game. I pretty much knew where the game was headed. And even though they tied it up, once the Lightning, or actually I think they didn't tie it, but once the Lightning, were up 2-1 or wherever they were, I knew where it was headed. The Bruins just kept taking bad penalties. They kept getting scored on, and something happened in that game too. The Lightning just gained confidence, and maybe the back-to-back, the momentum that they got from the extra session, they took the momentum, and they were the better team. Bergeron did not do much in the series. It was disappointing. Krejci played pretty well. Marchand was the best Bruin by far, but Doc Emmerich paid homage to Zdeno Chara, who's been a tremendous player. He's a future Hall of Famer, a guy that won a cup with the Bruins. He was the Bruins captain, one of the best signings ever. I remember when the Bruins signed him, I was wondering if he was wondering about his skating. Would that signing work out? Because, he was a big guy. He's huge. He's 7 feet on skates, basically. The tallest player in NHL history is Daniel Chara. And what a career he's had. It's hard to believe that the New York Islanders traded him away, packaged him away, along with the first pick, which turned out to be Jason Spezza, the Ottawa Senators. And that was the infamous Alexei Yashin deal that also netted Bill Buchholz. Yeah, I actually remember that, believe it or not. So, but Daniel Chara left Ottawa, and when he left Ottawa, that was basically the end of Ottawa, with the exception of one run at our expense, at the Rangers' expense. But Daniel Chara has been tremendous for such a long time. He's 43 years of age. He is undecided what he's going to do. He still sounds like he intends to return and play. He has spent 14 years, basically 13, 14 years with the Boston Bruins, and they've been one of the best teams in the league for a long time. And they've been in the league. He's been with them for a long time, and they've been competitive. They've been one of the better teams, elite teams in the league. And I can't say enough good things about Daniel Chara. I mean, this is a guy that has been tremendous. His career plus minus is plus 288. It also is tough, as we know. He could fight anybody. If he played one more year, he'd probably get to 212 in penalty minutes. He also has over 200 goals scored, 205, 656 points from Slovakia. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Fame guy. He's a class guy. You saw a lot of respect
in that handshake line. And I love the handshake. That's the best part of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they still do it. And there was a lot of respect. And Doc Emmerich said a lot of nice things. And that's why I think Doc's the best. And there are a lot of great broadcasters that do play-by-play for the NHL. Gord Miller is one of the guys that they like. I can't think of the other guy that does it for Sportsnet, but I like him as well. I love Kenny Albert, obviously. I like the guy who does it for NBC as well from the Carolina Hurricanes. He's really good. So I miss Dave Schrader, though. Dave Schrader was great. The voice. God rest his soul. With cancer, obviously. But if it is the last time, as Doc said, Doc pretty much felt that it was the last time they'll be in a Bruins jersey because they do have Torrey Crews that's going to be unrestricted. They also have Jake Ruff that's RFA. What a career for Zdeno Chara. So I just wanted to say that. So not much left to do. I was going to talk baseball, maybe some tennis and U.S. Open. But what I'll do is I'll do a little overtime. I'm just going to talk quickly about the Yankees. They really needed to get a win in the worst way over the Tampa Rays. And look, this regular season doesn't mean anything, really. That's true. But the Tampa Rays have dominated the Yankees. They had won 7 of the first 8 games. They lit up Gerrit Cole, hitting 2 more home runs against Nakuda Choi, who just seems to have the Yankees number. He is a former Yankee, by the way. And and Kiermaier has home runs in the first 2 games, but the Yankees were able to get a win last night, 5-3 over the Rays. There were a little bit of fireworks at the end of the game. For a team that's not had a lot of success yet, they've been in the postseason, they've been in there, they have a really good team. They're very well managed by Kevin Cash, but they talk a lot of trash. And I think there is no love lost between the Rays and the Yankees because it's the Rays are the little guy. And their payroll is a lot less than the New York Yankees. And the Yankees are bruised and battered as usual with so many guys. Aaron Judge, obviously, Giancarlo Stanton, who never stays on the field. They are getting guys back. Labor Torres is going to be coming back. Zach Burton returned last night. DJ LeMayo just returned. And already DJ LeMayo pays dividends. He hits home runs. With 2 home runs, hits one to left field, hits one to short fortune right. DJ LeMahieu is just outstanding. I wanted him, and what a great signing that was by Brian Cashman. How about the debut by Xavi Garcia against the Mets? That was unbelievable what happened to the Mets. Mets win that doubleheader. They walk it off against Aroldis Chapman. And on the same night, Steve Cohen is going to become the Mets' new owner. And Mets fans, it doesn't get any better than that, than sweeping the Yankees, even though it's a doubleheader in 7 innings, with the walk-off. And they have to be they were feeling great. And then the Yankees come back and they take the next 3 games, and including that unbelievable comeback against the immortal Edwin Diaz. So Edwin Diaz could not get the final out, and most of the runs were unearned due to a error by the kid Jimenez, as we are in overtime now. Listening to hard hits here with Derek Felix flying solo overnight edition here on a September 2nd. On September 3rd. So actually, it is September 2nd. Happy September. Summer is almost ending. Summer's still here though, because there was still going to be some, hot days in this month. But as you know, the temperature has cooled down a little bit, which is good, very positive sign. Jim's going to be coming back, so I'm very excited about that. But I just, I think that it was important for the Yankees to get a win against the Rays. Tanaka fits relatively well. He was staked to a 2-0 lead by DJ LeMahieu's 2 home runs, his pair of home runs. DJ's just outstanding. But then he gets off a 2-run bomb, a bomb to Kevin Kiermaier, and the ball's still carrying. I don't know what kind of ball they're playing with, but it's still carrying tremendously. I mean, Alex Dickerson Fox Sexton from the San Francisco Giants hit three home runs. He recorded a three home run game and just an absolute rout for the Giants. What did it wind up being? It was 16-2, I think. But let's see. Yeah, the Cardinals won 16-2. What was the Giants' score? What they wind up winning? 23-5. Oh, holy crap. The first home, one of the home runs that Dickerson hit, it went into the third deck in Colorado. Now, I know the ball travels, of course, field, but that ball just, it took off. I mean, come on. You can't tell me that the balls still aren't juiced. They are juiced, okay? They definitely are. And the Giants, by the way, are wild card contention. They're 18-19, and they're wild card contention because you only have four teams in the National League, I think, with winning records. Are the Phillies over 500 now? They won again. They've been probably playing a lot better. They're already turning it around there. Dickerson in this game was 5 for 6, 5 out of 6 with 5 runs scored and 6 RBIs. So Alex Dickerson has become a little bit of a player for the San Francisco Giants, but you don't expect them to hit 3 home runs. And there are a lot of home runs being hit. You know, the other guy that continues to hit for the Giants is the journeyman, Donovan Solano. He was 4 for 6 with 6 RBIs himself. You know, and Donovan Solano's batting 345. This guy that played for the Marlins, he was even a Yankee, and then when he was not, he was even in the majors for a year or so. But he was picked up by the Giants last year, and he continues to hit. Both player Corey and Brandon Crawford, the shortstop, also had 6 RBIs and it went out. Yeah, a lot of strange doings. And sometimes that does happen, of course. Kevin Gausman, he was on the trade. He was available at the deadline. Didn't get moved by the Giants. Those 5 innings, gives him 2 earned. But you know, the Yankees getting off deck and getting a win against the Rays, That's definitely positive. They scored 3 runs in the 6th inning. Urshela had a couple of guys on base, and it was kind of strange what happened. So this is what happened. He hit a sinking opposite field line drive, and Kiermaier, who normally is very reliable, he's a former Gold Glove winner, he go for the ball. He was never going to catch it. He should have just let it drop in front of him, but he went a little risky dives, see if he could make the catch, and the ball wound up going by him. So 2 runs scored, and Urshela kept hustling, and he had the stops on. He kept going, so he went for home. The relay was in plenty of time, but Urshela made a great dive. He did a dive and swimmed around the tag and got his hand in. And it was a great call by the umpire. The umpire called him safe. And even live, I could tell that he was safe. And when you saw the replay, yeah, he was safe. And just tremendous stuff there in terms of what did. Tanaka also gave up a home run to the improving Willie Adams, a guy that all of a sudden is starting to become a player for the Rays. I thought he was going to be a bust, but maybe Dan was right about him. But the end of the game was very interesting. Very entertaining stuff there going on with apparently the Rays took exception to Chapman. Chapman getting his first save of the year. He has not pitched much. And Chapman was, I guess, he pumped his fist and maybe he said something probably nobody understood. But the Rays, they're always saying stuff. There's a lot of trash that has talked, that's been talked in these games, and they have owned the Yankees, it's true. Tanaka did go 6 innings. He did pick up the win, going 6 and striking out 7. Actually, he didn't give up the second home, and that was Lysica. Lysica's actually been an improvement, and I like to see him in the rotation, to be honest, but they did have him come out of the bullpen for this game. He was a spot starter for the double. Okay, for that short doubleheader, and he did a good job. Chapman striking out the last batter. The Yankees pitchers did a relatively good job. 9 innings, only 1 walk allowed, all the strikeouts, and to go 2 home runs, but he did a good job. Britton pitched a clean eighth inning. That's exactly what you want. And the Yankee bullpen has not been the same since Britton went down. And everybody complained about Britton because he blew that one game. But Zach Britton, for the most part, has been a good Yankee. And I felt the criticism was unwarranted. So nice to see Zach Britton come back, and it's going to help the bullpen. And maybe we'll have to see Chad Green serving up bat pitches. There's a reference right there, if you know it. It's from the old classic Nintendo game, Fat Pitches. He let them stay in and give up three home runs for the Mets. I did not understand that. But I've questioned some of Boone's managing decisions, especially pulling J.A. Happ. J.A. Happ, I know that he hadn't pitched in 12 days, and nobody knew how he would pitch, and he had not been good at all. He had over a 6-year ERA, I think, 6.5 ERA. And Happ wound up, he pitched so well in that one game, going 7 1/3, and they took him out. And I didn't understand it. I mean, his pitch count was good. But takes him out to have Green match up against Wilson Ramos. And Ramos had just done something the other day. But, you know, sometimes the by the book stuff is, sometimes you got to stay with the starter. Starter's pitching so well and retiring, I think, 8 in a row. He should have stuck with Happ there. That was a mistake. In the first pitch that Green, I think, delivered, Ramos hit out. And the Yankees wound up winning the game in parentheses extra innings because, well, let's face it, extra innings. I don't consider an 8-inning game extra innings. Whatever. So, but they did walk off, and they were in the nightcap. And the Mets have been losing games ever since the Steve Cohen thing was revealed. It's very strange. I don't know. Maybe they just have very bad luck. I have no idea, but I'm sure Mets fans are very excited that Fred Wilpon and the Wilpons will be out eventually, and Mets will become official very soon. And I think also they'll probably be excited when Brody Van Leegen is camped, because Brody Van Leegen has done a very poor job, even though I thought he made some decent additions at the quote-unquote trade deadline, and there was still a lot of activity, actually. The Yankees did not make any moves because the price was just too much. They were interested in Lance Lynn, but Lance Lynn did not go anywhere because the asking price from the Texas Rangers, so he didn't go anywhere. They also were interested in the Indians pitcher that moved, and they wanted too much. They wanted too much. And they wound up getting a great return, actually, from the Padres, from Mike Clevenger. That's the pitcher I'm picking up. But and Padres are going for it. They made, like, so many moves. They added about 8 new players. They got 2 new catchers behind the plate. They're making moves, and they have an MVP. He would be the MVP of the National League at this point, Fernando Tatis Jr. He's just unbelievable. His dad played. I remember when he played, obviously, played for the Expos. I think he came up with them, and well, he looked like he was going to be a star. He did, actually. I think it was the Cardinals. He started with the Cardinals. He did look like he was going to be a star. Wound up with an outside of one good season with them, but he struck out a little too much. But his son is great. He's a fantastic player. I remember taking note last year. I remember he looked like he was going to on track to maybe be a 30-30 guy in his rookie season. And, you know, if he didn't go down and he got 30-30, I wonder if he would have won rookie of the year over Pete Alonso, who was unbelievable last year with the 53 home runs, and he carried the Mets and made things interesting, and they almost got into the wild, almost snuck into the wild card. He wound up with 86 wins, and Alonso has not been the same player this year for the Mets. And that sometimes happens with sluggers. You know, he is a slugging first baseman. He's a guy that will strike out, he'll chase. He feels that he is hitting the ball hard, but he's hitting into some bad luck, and that could be true. But, you know, those big slugging first basemen, you know, the league will adjust. They'll make the adjustments. Look at Gary Sanchez. Look what's happened to him. I mean, Gary Sanchez can't even hit. He can't even hit 200 right now. He's 0-for-3 tonight. He did hit the grand slam, the huge grand slam, in the eighth inning of that just crazy game against the Mets bullpen. a ball that was demolished. I think it hit about 480 feet into the left field bleachers. When he does get a hold of one, I mean, yeah, they go a long way. He does have 6 home runs, but he, other than that, he just doesn't do anything. He strikes out. He's got about 39 strikeouts on the season, hitting 124. It's just, at some point, this is a guy that looked like he had a good idea of the strike zone when he first came up. And he didn't look like he was just going to beat a guy that was all or nothing. He looked like a guy that could hit 280, 285, and hit. He was going to hit you 40 home runs and be an MVP candidate and drive in 110. And the Yankees, they really think Highland still. Brian Cashman does. And I'm very frustrated with Sanchez because he's not that good behind the plate in terms of just being a catcher. Still too many pass balls, too many pitches getting by him. Does have a relatively strong arm, so he can throw guys out at second when they do steal. It's just he needs to be better. At some point, he needs to be better because this can't go on. It can't go on. And they did activate finally a Kyle Higashioka. I mean, that's good. So Higgy is back. So that's good news. Labor is still out, but he will be back sooner, which is good. All Tyler Wade did it all run. Unless he's not much of a hitter, he did it all run. A relatively important home run that gave J-Hop the 1-0 lead. That should have been enough for him to win, but it wasn't on Sunday because of Aaron Boone, or as I like to call him, Aaron Boone. Rob Craig Davis calls him Aaron Buffoon. So we all have our little nicknames, and we have fun with that. But the Yankees get an important win, and we should see Gleyber Torres activated very soon. So that's a good thing. So they are getting a little healthier. I don't know when you'll see Judge back. I think Stanton will be back before Judge. So we're finally in September, but if he re-aggravated that same calf, and I don't understand what's going on with the Yankees training staff, and they did bring in guys. Is it because these players didn't get enough reps? Judge is an injury-prone guy because he's a big guy. Is it they don't get enough reps? You're seeing so many more injuries, and I do think not having extended spring training hurt some of these guys, especially a lot of the pitchers, and you're seeing a lot of injuries in baseball, not just the New York Yankees, but the Yankees, they do get a win. And at the end of the game, after Chapman celebrated or whatever, you had the Rays. It was about 3 or 4 of them. They came out of the dugout, and they were ready. They started mouthing off with masks on, mind you. And Michael Tate's talking about it. And Michael Tate's like, they're not supposed to do this, because they're talking about social distancing. Like, they're social distancing in the dugout. You're still going to have some COVID cases. There haven't been that many, though, anyway, so that's good. But they did have to cancel the Oakland Athletics series. So the entire Oakland Athletics Seattle Mariners series got canceled because I don't even think it was a player, but somebody from the Oakland Athletics came down with COVID-19. So, and they have to be safe. That's just how it has to be. And so they will do that. So no series. I don't know if they'll make up the games. I don't know how they're going to do that. You still have teams making up games. The Cardinals are making up games. The Marlins made up a game. They beat the Mets with DeGrom on the mound, mind you. After the Mets lost, they beat DeGrom yesterday. Actually, it's Monday now, so it's really the other day and a half ago. DeGrom only gave up 1 earned, but he did give up a home run. And although his ERA went down, he did give up 4 runs, and the Marlins hit a couple home runs, and they wound up winning, coming back and winning, and beating DeGrom. So they beat DeGrom, something that you just don't see, DeGrom losing a game. And Cole's lost 2 in a row. And Cole has not pitched. He isn't the ace, and most part he strikes a lot of guys, but he's given up a lot of home runs. So that's an area, obviously, he wants to clean up. And he also has pitched twice against the Rays, and the Rays have hit the ball out of the ballpark a couple times. So not something you want to see from your ace. They paid over $300 million for Gerrit Cole. I thought it was crazy, and I still do. And I like Gerrit Cole. I'm a fan of his, but that is what it is when it comes to the contract. So I just wonder, you know, there is a obviously rubber game between the Tampa Rays and the New York Yankees. Will there be any carryover? Will there be some carryover between the two teams for this third game? That'll be interesting to see as we follow it and see what happens on Wednesday, a little bit later with the Wednesday game. So you got that going on. The Yankees did gain a game on the Toronto Blue Jays as they lost to the Miami Marlins, who, believe it or not, they're in playoff position. They won two in a row, and they're not playing as well. The Mets have been dominating the Marlins for the most part. I think the Marlins have won the last two against them, but the Marlins are over 500. You know, if you look at it right now, here it is. You got the Braves. They're up to 21-14. And they've been the best team, even without Soroka, who is just a great ace, obviously, and a guy that they will miss. Had that terrible injury and going to have a rehab ahead of him. And nobody likes to see that. And that was against the Mets. The Mets blew them out once he left the game. But they're 21-14. And then you have the Marlins at 16-15 and the Phillies at 16-15. Each three games back, only one in the loss column. But they are in the wild card, the expanded wild card, because you have the eight teams making it. The Mets, New York Mets, are 15-21, have lost five straight games, and they should be better than what they are. And yet, you know, Syndergaard or no Syndergaard, Stroman, no Stroman either, it shouldn't matter. They should not be 15-21. I don't understand why they're struggling so much. Now, the bullpen is not good, obviously. That is true. And they have moved Seth Lugo to the rotation. They had to do it out of necessity. Porcello has been up and down. Waka just came back, and he's going to be up and down as well. I think he had that same surgery that Matt Harvey had, and obviously Matt Harvey was never the same pitcher. So that's unfortunate, and they've just been bad. I mean, yeah, it's the amazing thing is Soto is just unbelievable. He's one of the best players in baseball. He's got 11 home runs. He's hitting like 350 or 360 for the Nats, and they're 12-21. And Trey Turner is hitting like 370, and he's been terrific. He has 7 home runs. I've always felt that he could be an MVP candidate. He's healthy this year. He's having a great run, but it does not matter. It doesn't matter. So they are pretty much done. Obviously, without Strasburg, when Strasburg went down, that was basically the end of their year. Even though they still have Scherzer or Corbin, they do miss Anthony Rendon, who's putting up an excellent year for the Angels. But the Angels are a terrible team, even with Madden, or I like to call him Madmon, because he is a little bit of a madman. Managing them, they are one of the worst teams in baseball, despite the fact that they have Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon. Ohtani has not been the same player at the plate, at least. Obviously, he's not going to ever pitch again. They should be able to put up runs, but they can't. The problem with them is they can't pitch. They don't have any pitching. I wonder if it's not a topic that I'll discuss in length tonight because we don't have any guests. In a couple of years, if the Angels still have not turned around under Joe Maddon, will they consider moving Trout? I know that's a huge contract, but don't you think, imagine what you get from Mike Trout at, say, age 31? Like, man, I'm sure there would be some teams interested. Obviously, I don't know how many teams could take on the contract, but they might have to do it. They might have to consider trading that man. They might have to consider trading. And he is an all-time great. I won't say that he's an all-time great, despite the fact that he's only played a few postseason games and they lost. And Mike Trout's, maybe I shouldn't say all-time great, but, I mean, you look at every year that he puts up and he's just outstanding. And I know that he has not been a great. He's been in a little bit of a slump. So, Mike Trout is obviously, he's in a class by himself.
So I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to be in that class as well. I think that kid that you see for the White Sox, the 10 home runs, in the outfield, playing center field, he looks like he's going to also be in the class. Bellinger, I know Bellinger got off lousy stuff, but he's been hitting a lot better lately. I'm talking about Louis Robert, by the way, the center fielder for the White Sox. He's just been on fire. They finally lost the game to the White Sox. They actually moved into first place. But they did drop a game final. They won 6 for 7 in a row. 22-14. The Twins were able to edge them 3-2. So the White Sox actually lose again. But that lineup is really sick. Jimenez had 2 RBIs. Jimenez, I tell you, the Cubs probably have to regret right now. He's not going to be a big on base machine. You can see he does not walk really. He strike out a lot more than a walk. But he looks like the real deal. I had heard a lot about him. He's really good. They got a young second baseman, Madrigal, supposed to be really good. He's hitting so far. This is a team that is on the rise of Rayo, having an caliber type year. I think he'd definitely be in the conversation. He's been tremendous and terrific. And obviously, Anderson, that's the shortstop. He's excellent. You know, it is hard to believe that the White Sox gave away Fernando Tatis. And that trade for James Shields, the Padres, a trade they made on 2015, and looked it up. And one thing I think is happening is that Anderson, and we're getting Anderson at second baseman, or maybe he's getting a third baseman, can you imagine that? How much better than 15? Yeah, it's really crazy because when they signed the team, they had signed from the year prior. I think it was 16 on the trade. Oops. That was a huge mistake. Because the team has a world of talent, and the Padres are a team that is on the rise. And they have a team to watch out for. They're going to be broken with. Are the San Diego Padres. So, you do have a lot of interesting things going on in the world of baseball. You do have the Dodgers. The Dodgers are over here having a great regular season. It's just, it's mostly going to be a question. That's having a MVP caliber year. It'll be in the mix. The Seas would be about leading county, obviously. I still would put, even though I will say that if you are on a last place team, you probably shouldn't be. I don't think you should be in the top three. I don't think you shouldn't be up for MVP. I'm talking about obviously Soto, Juan Soto, who's just terrific. But if you're on a last place team, that's just how I feel about it. I don't believe in voting for a guy. Unless there's just nobody that stands out, nobody comes to have a great season. You know, Trout's won the MVPs. He's great and he's unbelievable. But you know, and how many times the Angels made the playoffs? What do they got? They got 21. How many? 22. 22 losses. Julius. Starting to pitch off the Dodgers, Julio Jason Correa is a guy that I've been waiting for a long time. Lux is actually up with the team. They recalled him. That's a great Rios guy. Rios is a guy that hit last year, Edwin Rios. But he's a little bit older. If anybody did ever trade for Trout, yeah, I'll tell you, the Dodgers would definitely trade for Trout if they still have a one series. I imagine what a package could be, whether it's a Corey Seager. And Corey Seager, by the way, is healthy this year and he's having a really good year in that lineup. That's a great lineup, obviously. So next month, he's not hitting for any average. But you know, if you took like a package, right? You took Gavin Lux, obviously, was supposed to be it's a first round pick, and he's supposed to be a guy that's supposed to be just a great player, a second baseman. And it's just
And they also have they have great pitching prospects as well. Maybe you could roll the deck and you could front load it. But I mean, yeah, is it unrealistic to try to get traded? Probably is, because the contract and how many teams would really be able to do it. The Dodgers would be one. I mean, maybe the Padres will have interest. Look, this is not something that could happen now, obviously. It will all depend. But the Tigers are 17-16. Look at that. The Orioles are 16-19. They stopped playing good ball. You know, the best factor of left lost to them. That bad. That is bad. That's very bad. But, who pitched? That's right. The Mets had to throw somebody that I've never heard of before. That's right. They threw this kid, Ariel Jurado. He's 24 years old. And, he has pitched in the majors before. So, where's he from? Agua Dulce, Panama. Wow. This is a great, this is a name. Is Ariel Bolivar Toronto. I think it's got to be pronounced Toronto. Wow. What a name this is. This is an unbelievable name. I've seen a lot of names. I don't think I've ever seen a name like that. It was not a good outing for him. So let's just put it that way. He gave up 5 earned and a home run and 9 hits, 4 innings. Colome was not much better. Hughes, who seems to be a trusted reliever under the first-year manager, did pitch a scoreless, but the Mets lose. Cano continues to rake. So even though that trade probably, in the long term, that's going to be a very bad trade. You know, Cano is raking. Edwin Diaz doesn't look like he's a closer for the Mets, and they continue to think Edwin Diaz could be a closer. He just doesn't look like he could pitch in New York. When it's a high leverage situation, there's even though he's got a good ERA, he strikes out a lot of guys. That should not have happened against the Yankees. But I don't know how you can't get the final out. Pick up the rookie who made the throwing error. I don't understand how the Yankees were able to get all those runs and Hicks, who had been ice cold hitting the 2-run home run to tie the game. And Sterling was—it was weird. I was listening to the game, and Sterling, yeah, he did the high bar thing, but maybe he was kind of stunned by it too. He didn't go crazy. He didn't go as crazy. Maybe he's fine. Maybe it's a little different because of the way the season set up, or maybe he was relatively shocked at the comeback that they had, and Luke Fort's continuing to get big hits. He got 13 home runs, and he's been, how about him? How about putting him in the MVP conversation? Yeah, believe it or not, he would be a candidate. He would probably be in the top 5 or 6. Let's put him in there. This Nunez kid for the Orioles, he had 2 home runs against the Mets. Renato Nunez is 26. He is legit. He continues to hit. He's got 9 home runs. And Santander, that's another guy. Outfielder, another guy that's really good. Anthony Santander, he's 25 years old. He had a good year last year, hitting over 30 home runs. The Orioles have found some players. Valleca was 4-for-4 in this game, Pat Valleca. I think he's just a reserve, so he just had one of those games where he was good. And they don't even play Chris Davis, and Chris Davis has that just awful, god-awful contract. Mountcastle is a guy that they just recalled, I think, recently. He's relatively new, a former first-round pick. So far, he's hitting. Ryan Mountcastle is a first baseman. Tonight, he played left field. And first base went to Nunez. Iglesias, they just pick him up. Iglesias has been well-traveled. He's a journeyman. He's a guy that plays shortstop. He's good defensively. He's played for the Tigers, the Red Sox. Well, actually, he's hitting. He's just hitting. He's hitting well for them. He's not going to hit for a lot of pop, but he can hit for a okay average. He's hitting .405 for the Orioles in 20-plus games, 21 games. So he's done a nice job. Francisco is the younger catcher, and I would expect him. He's the future at catcher. This team, I give them credit. You know, they started out good, and they've come a little bit back to the pack. How many wins did I project for them? I don't know. I obviously thought it would be the under, but I give them credit. Obviously, they've done a really good job. I'm gonna wrap this up. You know what I'll do? I'm going to do the NBA tomorrow, actually, because I did catch the end of the Nuggets-Jazz game, and that was crazy. Nuggets completed a comeback from 3-1 down. They pull it out, 80-78. Wouldn't it have been possible without Jamal Murray? Obviously, I have not watched a lot of NBA. I understand why they're doing what they're doing, but I also feel... I feel like there's ignoring other stuff, and I don't know. I think putting all that stuff on the back of your jersey is ridiculous. These are rich, for the most part, rich and very privileged athletes, and they want to set a proper example. Go out there, get into the communities, and raise the money, and don't forget about the families. It's not just police. It's not just bad police. And what about a family that lost their 5-year-old daughter in North Carolina? Or what about the family that lost their one-year-old in New York, in Allison? What about Brandon Hendricks, 17-year-old who's going to go to attend St. John's basketball player in the box, gunfire? What about what's happening in Chicago? What continues to happen? What about it? What about the rising crime here in the Big Apple? Look, racism is unacceptable. It shouldn't happen. But it does. There are incidents between the cops and African Americans, to be politically correct. And I don't usually am, but also you have to look at some of the records of some of the victims. Jacob Blake's lucky to still be alive, should he have been shot 7 times in the back and paralyzed from the waist down? Absolutely not. Not in front of his kids. Not when he's trying to break up a fight to a woman who were arguing. Now, Kenosha, Wisconsin. He did have an arrest warrant out. He did. There was an arrest warrant out for a sexual assault. He does have a criminal record. I'm not justifying what they did. But if you do resist arrest, like the case in Atlanta that we saw, which led to a tragedy, terrible tragedy, you do resist, it could only cause bad things and sometimes fatal things and tragedies. So, I think that if more people listened and there was better communication, and that goes for cops as well, but I also think that if they do go to arrest you, that you have to comply. Whether you're Democrat, Republican, or whatever you are, I'm independent now. I don't like all the I feel like Democrats are using... They're using a lot of these tragedies, and both sides are, and I don't like that. I'm not in favor of that. So, but there has to be a better understanding, a better way to do things. Does some police need to be reformed? That's possible. That's definitely possible. There may be some, maybe there are some cops that shouldn't have their badge. I went on record earlier in a little bit of a Facebook debate with somebody I know, and I said, there are good people, there are bad people. And it doesn't matter what color, what race you are, what ethnicity you are, background. If you do commit a crime, you should do the time. You should pay. That's the truth. So they want to talk about discrimination. There is some discrimination. But they never talk about the other stuff. And that's the part that I don't understand. Right. You have to address more of it. Maybe it's not being as educated. Maybe it's living in poor neighborhoods, and maybe it's not having as many fathers around. I don't know. But again, not to sound like a broken record, but I feel like a lot of this stuff is preventable. Better communication, if there is more listening, there is better understanding between the community and the law enforcement, who are supposed to serve and protect. That's what they're supposed to do. Some of these situations that happen, they do get out of control. Like Eric Garner. But he also resisted and he wound up dead, and he shouldn't be dead. There is something lost in translation when it comes to where this country is and the direction it is. So I'm not mad. I think I'm more like disappointed when I see the way things are, when I see the way it is handled by both sides, when I see some of the statements that I see, and I don't like the progressive movement at all. The fact that there are actually people who are elected officials that want to defund the police, I think that's insane. You can't defund them. If you want to make it safer for everyone, you can. But that's only going to lead to more problems. You can't have the inmates run in the asylum. That's not going to work. And there are too many repeat offenders that are out on the streets. Like the guy, like the 25-year-old that attempted a rape on a female in the city and got caught in the Bronx and got arrested. Well, I hope they put him away for a long time. Or the teenagers that basically were charged with attempted murder of a couple of kids out here in the bad part of Staten Island on the North Shore, Bakersfield. Yeah, they sound like they're great, great guys, 18, 19 years old, huh? I just think that we need to have more open discussions without yelling at each other, talking the way I'm talking and speaking to all this stuff. But I just want to say great comeback by the Denver Nuggets. I did take them to come out of the West Conference. It was more than I wanted to be different. I knew the Jazz could give them a series. Donovan Mitchell was a tremendous scorer and a heck of a player. There are some flaws in this game, but you know, sometimes he did turn it over a lot, as JPG was showing me. But I will say that, it must have been a lot of defense. And there wasn't a lot of offense. An 80-70 game after most of the games the NBA players are very high scoring. And it went right down to the wire with Connolly. What happened was the Nuggets missed a layup, but we flipped it on right in time for the end. They missed a layup at one end, which would have finished the game. When they fouled, they should have just pulled the ball out and got fouled. And that was not the right play. They should have pulled it out and waited to get fouled. They did not. And then the Jazz came back on the other end and quickly got it up to Mike Connolly, who shot it at the buzzer, at it off in time, or about maybe 35 feet out, and it went in and out. That's how close the Jazz were to stealing the seventh and final game. And this was a game, I think, didn't they lead by 15 points? I think so. So you have to give the Nuggets a lot of credit for winning. And Jokic is the guy who came up big. Jamal Murray had carried them. He scored 50 points in two of the games, including a loss and 50 in the last one. They're called Nuggets historic comeback against the Jazz. Social media erupts. This is a trailed historic comeback. But I think this is a lot of stuff on the Nuggets. Yeah, I like the Nuggets. I like them, obviously. Gary Harris was back for this game. Yeah, they definitely missed him. He didn't play early on when they had felt one behind. They're still without one of their regulars, so looks like there was for the core NBA fan, for the Nuggets fan, there's a lot of excitement generated, and congratulations to them. I would love to see them beat the Clippers. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that's a bad matchup for them. I thought that they were going to wind up facing. That's right, because I picked OKC. I thought that they came out the other way. I thought that they would wind up getting the Lakers, and I thought they matched up better with the Lakers. And I thought I actually picked them to go to the conference final, and I had them upsetting both the Lakers and Clippers. I just want them to be different. And I had the Raptors, and the Raptors are in all sorts of trouble against the Celtics. They lost the first two games. They lost a close game tonight. I would have thought the way the last minute was, but I thought the Raps would have won the close game. They blew a lead in game one, and Kemba Walker had a great step back, big step back jumper that increased the lead to three. And Dan Fleet, who's been money for the Raps, I only saw maybe the final couple minutes, and he chucked his balls off and missed three bad 3-point shots. And he's a great shooter, but he could not get one to go. And they lose by 3 points. And the Raptors, who are picked actually to win it all, they're down two games to them, the Celtics, who so far are looking pretty good. Look at the box score here. Mitchell, 22 points, 9 rebounds, but he had a lot of turnovers. Connolly did not have that great again. Connolly actually had a really good series, 8 points and 7 assists. Gobert, 19 points and 18 rebounds. This was a low-scoring game, not 7 points, 5 assists, and 8 rebounds for Ingles. Clarkson, 10 points off the bench. Clarkson became a really good player for them. Jokic had the big game for the Nuggets tonight, 33 points and 14 rebounds and 4 assists. He's an excellent player. Not great defensively when it comes to moving. That's why I think the matchup with the Clips is a mismatch. I think that the Clips will get him away from the basket. And the Clips are going to be rested. They did have to go 6 games against the Mavs. And I think Marcus Morris Jr., who stepped on Doncic's ankle, which that was the one that he played on, the ankle sprain, where he still had a great game 6 without Porzingis, who had it played through a meniscus tear. He had 2 games. I feel like Marcus Morris Jr. should not play game 1. He should be suspended for what he did. That looked intentional to me because he did it before in another game or a foul. So it was 30 points for Jokic, 17 points for Murray. Michael Porter Jr., the guy that JPG gives a hard time, had 10 points off the bench in 17 minutes with 9 rebounds. Not bad. Now, and JPG still likes to give me crap about him, but he was the other guy in double digits and had 9 rebounds, so he's an important guy. And Harris played I'm short of shooting percentage. Luckily, 38% for the Jazz, to 37.3 for the Nuggets. Wow, 30 for 79 compared to 31 for 83. That's how close these two teams were. Each team only made 8 threes, 8 for 34 for the Jazz, who the Matt Connelly missed. That was so close to going down. 8 out of 31 for the Denver Nuggets. Free throws, 10 of 15 for the Jazz, 10 for 13 for the Nuggets. Wow. Rebounds, 48 for the Jazz, 46 for the Nuggets. 21 assists for the Nuggets, 16 for the Jazz. Blocks, 4 blocks to 3 blocks in favor of Denver. 7 steals to 6 steals in favor of Denver. 10 turnovers for the Nuggets, 12 turnovers for the Jazz. Oh, this game was very close. Points in the paint did go to the Jazz due to the big guy, 40 points for them to 28. But the Nuggets come back from 3-1 down. Great job out of them to pull it out. I never gave up on them. I thought they still could come back, but it looked like they were going to go home. But good for them. But they are going to get the Clippers. I think the Clippers will probably handle them. I'm going to say 5 games. The Clips, I think they got an awakening call. I think Paul George will play better in the next series. I just think they got too many guys that could hurt the Nuggets. Kawhi, obviously. The former Hawk, that Lou Williams, who just can score from anywhere. Morris Jr. is a good player. They're going to be tough. I think that's a tough matchup. I'm hoping that it could be a competitive 6-game series. I hope that I'm wrong. I would like the Nuggets to pull it off, but we really see the Lakers losing to the Rockets, who have to go 7 games against the other team that can't score, and Chris Paul outplaying Russell Westbrook, and they forced the game 7. And they were down 3-1, and they have to go to a game. Their game 7 is tomorrow, or later tonight, actually, in the bubble in Orlando. They shouldn't have to play 7 games against OKC, and I only took OKC to be different. I know that they can't really score with the Rockets and Harden, but I think the Lakers will crush either team. They would crush the Thunder. They'd probably sweep them. The Rockets, God, you'd think they would be more competitive, but they needed to wrap up their series earlier. I would expect the Rockets to win. If they don't win, that could do it. That could be the end of the D'Antoni era. I like D'Antoni. He's a really good coach, and he's had some bad luck in the playoffs with the Suns, obviously. And they had Amari, and they had a squad there. They had a squad. They had Q Rich, and they had Steve Nash, 2-time MVP, Sean Marion, the Matrix. Guy they had off the bench that was just instant offense. They had him as well. Guard, I can't think of his name right now, but the suspension obviously didn't help. I don't know if they would have still beat the Nuggets. Maybe they would have. Maybe they would have beat the Spurs. Maybe they would have won it that year. But and then D'Antoni seems to follow him around. The Rockets not able to beat the Warriors. He's had some bad luck, D'Antoni. Yeah, this is a do-or-die for the Rockets, though, especially for D'Antoni and for James Harden, and especially Russell Westbrook, too, who they gave up a lot for. They gave up a lot of draft picks for just to trade, just because Harden didn't want to play with Chris Paul anymore. And maybe Chris Paul is right. But Harden always has to go about the ball in his hands. Chris Paul, even at the age of 34, he's still a tremendous player. Maybe not as good as he was before, but he still is Chris Paul. So that's about as much NBA as I usually do. Football is going to be coming back in about 9 days or 8 days from now. There is your Thursday night game. I won't be watching any of the games. They're going to put all the things in their helmet. I just don't agree with that. I don't agree with it. The reason I don't agree with it, you want to put Breonna Taylor on your hat? Go ahead. Breonna Taylor is a victim, a real victim. She was an EMT. She didn't deserve what she got. And I think the reason that this case is taking so long is because they have to go through everything. That was a raid. That was a failed drug raid that went bad. But some of these other cases are a little bit different. I will listen to the Giants games as I usually do with Bob Papa and Carl Banks. I love them. They're great together. Follow Danny Dimes or Daniel Jones, I like to say, Saquon Barkley, and they did make a big signing. They needed somebody for their secondary at the Giants, and because so they wound up with signing Logan Ryan. So they paid him $7.5 million, a guy that has like 16 or 17 interceptions career. Played for the Pats, won a couple of Super Bowls. Also played for the Titans. So Logan Ryan, the kid is coming home, and I think that's pretty exciting. They need secondary help because of the situation that they have right now. Yeah, it's not a great situation when it comes to the Giants. So. Yeah. So, actually, Logan Ryan, it isn't Logan Ryan. It's somebody else. Which guy is it that's coming home? Who's the kid that's coming home for them? Which corner did they sign? Their backs. Yeah, it is Logan Ryan. Yeah, I was right. Right the first time. I'm not always familiar with names. So, with Logan Ryan signed, reunion with Prince Akamora. There's a name from the past. Could be next, or should be next, according to an article here by Art Stapleton. I've heard of him. He never was as good as they felt that he would be. It would be interesting. If they did a reunion with him, maybe wound up with the Bears. I don't know. I don't know what the expectations are. And I'm just wondering how football will do when it comes to the coronavirus, because you're playing outside, they're traveling. Obviously, they're going to be tested. They're not going to be playing in a bubble like the basketball. No, but no positives. And NHL, no positives, the NHL either. So there's a lot more personnel on the field. So there are questions. I have some questions about the NFL when it comes to that. So I pretty much covered everything I wanted to cover now. So I'm going to say goodnight. So do have a great evening, and be sure to tune into the next one. Hopefully we'll get Wheeler and we'll bring some of the band back. Have a good night, everyone. This is Derek Felix signing off the Hard Hits Network, and enjoy your Wednesday.